This is Wine, Women, and Revolution with your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. Hi, and welcome to Wine, Women, and Revolution. I'm your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. You can find us online at www.njrevolutionradio.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and get us wherever you get your podcasts from. Today, I'm talking about an activist success, or at least a temporary success that we had. Today in the studio with me, I have Helen Kiokas from the League of Women Voters. Welcome to the show, Helen.
Thanks, Heather.
So today we're going to be talking about all things gerrymandering. I also have some clips from when I was at the actual day that a bunch of women came together to try to stop the bill that led to the success, and I'll be interspersing them in along with the interview. The Democratic legislature here in New Jersey not too long ago tried to push through a gerrymandering bill, and activists from across the state came together to fight that, and the League of Women Voters of New Jersey was one of the organizations there. But let's hear from a couple of other people that were there the day of the event, why they were there opposing this bill.
Okay, hi, I'm William Adler from Princeton University's Princeton Gerrymandering Project, and I'm opposed to gerrymandering because I think that voters should choose their politicians rather than the other way around.
I'm Wynn Kung, and I'm the Executive Director of Action Together New Jersey. We are the largest progressive on-the-ground grassroots group in New Jersey. We have 20 county chapters with over 18,000 members, and we're against this gerrymandering bill because grassroots activism exploded after the November 2016 elections. We saw pillars of democracy really being attacked, and so we got really active, and whereas we were not engaged before, we said, you know, it's time for us to get engaged now. And the reason why we're against this bill is because it's also attacking what we think to be our democracy. It's kind of very anti-democratic. It's using partisan data, which it should not use. It's appointing sitting legislators to commissioners. And in 1966, we took that away from our Constitution. I don't see the need for us to go back to 1966 and putting on sitting legislators to determine the drawing of the map. And so those two things are problematic. The wording on how they do the math, a layperson can't even understand it. I read it 10 times. I couldn't understand it. And it's so vague, and it opens up for a lot of interpretation. And then lastly, the proposed language that would appear on the ballot should it pass leads the voter to only vote yes. So it's very misleading. So what we want is, we have really good redistricting plans in the books already. So if we're going to work on it, let's do something that makes it even better. Something that's nonpartisan, that's democratic, that's clear, transparent, and allows the public plenty of time for input instead of rushing this through the lame duck session.
Okay, so my name is Brian Lee, and I'll be with Indivisible Central New Jersey. And I'm against the gerrymandering bill because gerrymandering is wrong, no matter who is doing it. I mean, I'm a lifelong Democratic activist. I have worked on countless Democratic campaigns, and unfortunately, most of them have lost. So believe me, I want Democrats to win. But I want to win in a fair and just way. And gerrymandering, no matter who is doing it, is wrong because it dilutes the will of the people. It makes elected officials less accountable to the voters. And it's just plain undemocratic.
My name is Meredith Meisenheimer. I'm with South Jersey Women for Progressive Change. And I'm opposed to the gerrymandering bills because rigging the system is wrong no matter which party does it. We don't need to cheat to win elections. And these bills will be very dangerous in that they will give a ton of power for a handful of legislators to pick their own voters. And that's not right, and that's not democratic.
Hi, I'm Nancy Hedinger. I'm president of the League of Women Voters of New Jersey, and we are opposed to this legislation, or these proposals, because we don't feel that partisan data should be used in determining how legislative districts should be drawn. We don't believe there should be a calculation in our Constitution that makes that determination, and we feel that it's a power grab from the citizens. So we are hoping that the legislators will vote this legislation down, these proposals down, and we can go back to the drawing board and compromise on something that works for everyone and takes citizens into consideration.
We've heard from them, so now let's hear from you. So let's start off a little bit with, what can you tell me like about the League of Women Voters? What kind of things you focus on in New Jersey and what kind of work you're doing?
So we are about to celebrate our 100th anniversary in 2020. The League was created after women received the right to vote with the 19th Amendment. So we've been around for almost a century. In New Jersey, we focus on issues that expand our democratic processes, improve our democratic processes, empower voters, and a lot of other issues related to the public interest and the public good. So we have 35 local chapters across the state, and I work with the State League of Women Voters on statewide policy issues. So I work to advance legislative priorities at the state level, and redistricting reform is one of them. So that's how I got involved with this redistricting work.
All right, so let's get into the meat and bones a little bit about what the bill actually was. Can you describe what this proposed bill really was?
Sure. So I do want to start by saying that we do need reforms. The current process has a lot of issues. There are the Constitution is silent on most key areas where we do need language to protect communities, to protect voters, and to make sure the redistricting process is fair. So we do believe that reforms are necessary. And because it's something that only comes up once every 10 years, this is the time to start talking about reforms and to try and get something through. But what the proposals that were on the table, they were prioritizing partisanship data, past election results, statewide election results, and voter histories, and using that data as one of the main line drawing standards. So when it's time to redraw district lines, it's after the census, because people move, communities change, and we have to make sure that everyone is equally and fairly represented, and that the principle of one person, one vote is upheld. So we have to change the boundary lines of the voting districts to make sure everyone's equally and fairly represented. And we believe that the way it should be done is to use the census data along with ample public input to understand how people want to be represented and where their communities of interest are, information that we can't get from census data alone. So with those things, we can create fair districts where people feel like they can hold their elected officials accountable, that they are being represented at the state house, and that they have a voice. So the proposals that were put forward would use voter data in a way that we felt was setting up, laying the foundation for partisan gerrymandering in the state, because it would create districts in a way where the populations had to meet, there would need to be a certain percentage of Democratic voters and a certain percentage of Republican voters in the districts. And that's just something that we believe shouldn't be used at all. So that was the number one issue we had with the proposal, was the use of voter data in a way that would lay the foundation for the gerrymandering of our state. Because in order to achieve these, the calculations that they had in the proposal, in order to meet the requirements of those metrics, would have potentially broken up communities of interest, broken up communities of color, broken up communities in other ways in order to achieve these party favorability metrics.
Okay, so if I'm understanding,
does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I'm understanding it. But they put in this legislation that, you know, each district has to be a certain percentage of Democrats, a certain percentage of Republicans. Only talking about the two major parties, they didn't give any consideration to third parties or alternative parties. But they'd have to move people around where their voting districts are to force them to fit into these requirements that they themselves set.
Right. And their definition of competitive, so they, in the language, they stated that at least 25% of districts should be competitive. And usually when we hear the word competitive, we, you know, we think, yeah, that's great. Elections should be competitive. But the way that they were defining competitive was, it was different than how average people think of the word competitive. So in their, based on their calculation, a competitive district could have been one that had as much as a 60% Democratic composition, a 40% Republican. So that, according to their definition, would have been a competitive district.
Right. And by saying the outcome is a foregone conclusion that the district would go Democrat, there's nothing competitive about that.
And stating that at least 25% meant that they could create more competitive districts. So if they said, you know, we're going to create 50 competitive districts, and 50 districts would have to fit within that calculation. So that's using past voter data and creating districts using partisan data, we believed would create safe seats. It would create 40 safe seats. And predetermine election outcomes. And based on what we see in other states, when legislators feel safe in their seats, when they feel secure, they're harder to hold accountable. And we think the process should include redistricting reforms that encourage civic engagement and make voters feel empowered and make them feel like they have a voice. But that's not what these calculations would have done. So that was, the calculations were the main reason we were opposing the proposals.
I guess my next question would be, what would a fair redistricting look like to the League of Women Voters?
Sure. So I'll add another thing. So that was was the main reason. Another thing that was included in the language was the protection of communities of interest, but they weren't including additional protections for communities of color. By only including communities of interest and lumping communities of color under that umbrella, they were basically saying any group with a shared social or economic or regional interest has the same standing as a community that has been historically disenfranchised, that is a protected class, protected by the Voting Rights Act. So they were lumping everyone together, and we and other groups around the state believe that if you're going to include standards, one of the first ones you should include is a racial equity provision that explicitly protects communities of color against packing and cracking and allows these communities to come together and elect candidates of their choice. So we saw this also as a way.
Cracking?
Oh, I apologize. So packing would be putting as many people of a certain group together. That's one way to dilute a group's voting power, is by concentrating as many of them as possible in one district. Or another way to dilute their voting power is by spreading them across as many districts as possible. And in order to achieve some of these partisan favorability calculations, we believe that some of that would have had to occur.
All right, so going back to the question of what would a fair redistricting look like?
So we believe fair redistricting should be community-driven and not outcomes-driven. So using partisan data to figure out how people have voted in the past to determine how they might vote in the future and create a district that way, that's an outcomes-driven process. And what we're saying is listen to the public, have an open and transparent process, collect input from people across the state, educate voters on what redistricting is, and make it a community-driven process. So the lines are redrawn based on what New Jerseyans want to see their district look like, how they want to be represented, what issues are important to them at the state level. So that's number one. They did have some things in their proposal that we agreed with. having a website, having the drafts of maps displayed for the public to provide input on. So that transparency and the public hearing process that they wanted to write into the Constitution, those are great, but we believe that the calculations they were using basically undermined all of the other good things that they had put in there. So it was almost a disingenuous attempt to collect public input if in the end the way they're going to draw the new district lines are by using partisanship data and not the input that they collect from the public. So a transparent process that centers the public's voice and prioritizes public input, and that uses the census data and reflects and gives us a map that reflects the diversity of the state, that's what a better process would look like. And we know from other states who have implemented reforms exactly what that language looks like in either legislation or constitutional amendments. We've seen what that language could look like. So we don't have to start from scratch and recreate the wheel. We have all these other states that we can use as a model to identify how we can lay out line drawing standards in our Constitution in order of priority in order to achieve a map that is the most fair it could be.
And so obviously the League of Women Voters was not the only organization that took issue with this bill, since voting rights are kind of a big concern for a lot of people, and fair and equitable voting is something we all should be fighting for. So activists from across the state came together and protested at these hearings and mm-hmm. spoke during the hearings, and some of the legislators made some very odd comments that we were all just being hysterical, or that Democrats don't gerrymander, that's only a Republican thing. But what do you think it was that sparked so many, primarily women, to come out on, I think it was a Thursday morning, to go to Trenton from across the state and really stand up for this?
Yeah, people are paying attention in a way they have not before. And this is a topic that, again, comes up once a decade. People start talking about it around the census. But we've seen from the last redistricting cycles in other states how gerrymandering can be used as a tool for voter suppression. So that understanding, I don't think it existed in the same way it does now, because gerrymandering has been happening for over 200 years since the first districts were created. But the impact of a partisan gerrymandered map and how using manipulating district lines and cracking and packing communities of color in a way to favor one group over another, all of this really became more visible after the last census and after the redistricting cycle that came after the 2010 census. And technology is another reason why, because software and computer programs exist now that didn't a few decades ago. So it's not just that gerrymandering has become more egregious, it's become more precise. Mm-hmm. So again, because with the use of technology, with the attention that this topic has gotten on late night talk shows, in the media because of the Supreme Court cases, two partisan gerrymandering cases went to the Supreme Court this past spring, although they were kicked back down to the lower courts. There wasn't a decision issued, but for all these reasons, more people are aware of redistricting, of what gerrymandering means, of the manipulation of district lines to favor one party over another, and how it can be used to suppress votes.
And why do you think it specifically resonated with women? You may not have the answer to this. It's just something I was wondering, that the crowd there was probably, I'd say, 80% female. What do you think it was specifically that made women interested in this topic?
The League of Women Voters of New Jersey is also a group led by women, as are most of our local chapters. The majority are women led. For me, women, you know, with the League of Women Voters, women have been leading the charge all along on all of our issues. I just think times are changing, and women are taking the lead in a lot of different areas, and we're still behind in terms of representation and the makeup of the legislature. New Jersey is not as bad as nationally in terms of how many women are in elected offices. We have about 30% women in the New Jersey legislature, but you know, we're a 51% women, 50% men in the state, and the legislature does not reflect that. So although we are making progress, we still have a long way to go. So this is a great sign, seeing all of these women who have been civically engaged since day one to, you know, people who've been civically engaged since November 2016. Regardless of when they did get involved, they're engaged now and they're paying attention, and it's what we need for democracy to work.
I agree, and I thought it was a fairly awesome thing that I go to Trenton periodically to lobby for different things, and it's not usually such a women-led charge as this particular issue was. So it was fairly cool to see that, and I definitely appreciated it, that women were actually the forefront of, hey, we need, you know, a fair voting system, that's a big deal to a lot of women.
Yeah, it was great.
And I think it would be naive to say that just because we won a temporary victory at this point in time, that they're just going to give up and stop. So I wanted to touch a little bit upon what we need to do to keep what we need to keep our eye on, how we need to keep people engaged so that they don't just slip this through when we're not paying attention.
So the League of Women Voters is paying attention. We were paying attention and knew that these bills existed and had been posted on the legislature's website. We just weren't sure when they would move. I personally had been monitoring them since the summer and checking in to see if anything was happening. And once they got on the calendar, we were able to move quickly and mobilize our members and reach out to other organizations who mobilized their members and did great outreach across the state. So we're watching. Because the census is coming up, and the window of opportunity to put forward reforms is open now, and it will slowly start closing. We think that's an opportunity to work with the legislature and to put forward real reforms. I don't think they will try to come up with something equally as bad and fast track it through, hoping no one pays attention. I mean, we've sent the message that we're paying attention. And I don't think it is something they're going to do again. I do believe that the fact that they pulled these proposals just 2 days before the vote, it sent the message to us that they really are listening. We were surprised that they pulled the proposals. We were very happy, but at the same time surprised. So I think that is a signal that they are willing to listen and work together moving forward. Because ultimately, even if they were successful in getting the votes they needed to get this on the ballot, then it would have resulted in all of these groups doing vote no campaigns leading up to elections.
When is the census?
The census starts April of 2020, and it ends at the end of the year. And then the data comes in. New Jersey gets the data in either a late January or early February of 2021. And then that's when the new redistricting process officially starts.
Okay. Because what they were trying to do, I don't think either one of us mentioned it, was they were going to vote on it at the end of last year and the beginning of this year, because they didn't have a large enough majority to just get it through.
Yeah.
So they were trying to do, you only needed a 50% vote 2 years in a row to get it on the ballot.
Right. So I can explain a little bit more about that. So we don't have the ability in New Jersey to circulate a petition the way they did in California and Michigan. These other states that are passing really progressive reforms have been able to do so with voter-led ballot initiatives. So we don't have that in New Jersey. If we want a question on the ballot, it has to go through the legislature. Both the Assembly and the Senate have to vote to approve it getting on the ballot. And in New Jersey, you can have one supermajority yes vote. So 3/5 of the Assembly and 3/5 of the Senate would have needed to vote yes on it in order to get on a ballot. But what they were trying to do was there's a second option, which is you can just get a simple majority yes vote. So they would have only needed 41 Assembly members and 21 senators to vote yes on it this year. But then they would have had to have a second yes vote in the next year. So they were trying to get one simple majority yes vote in 2018 and then a second simple majority yes vote in 2019. And that's the second way it could have made its way onto the ballot.
And luckily, since they pulled it in 2018, that's going to be a little more challenging, that they'd actually have to wait a whole other year, even if they passed it this year, that they couldn't do that again until 2020.
Right. So this is another reason why I feel hopeful, because if the goal is to still try and get something on the November 2019 ballot, a ballot question to the voters to reform the redistricting process, then moving forward, we need to come up with something that garners bipartisan support, because that's the only way it'll pass with one supermajority vote, is if both parties are in agreement that this is a good proposal and that they feel confident that voters would vote yes on it.
You brought something up that I wanted to touch on, even that wasn't specifically what we were talking about tonight, was that in New Jersey, we don't have the option of having voter-led ballot measures. Is that anything that the League of Women Voters or any of the organizations you know are trying to fight for to get us that right?
That's not something that the League is working on. Very few states do have that in their constitution, have a process where voters can get a question on the ballot. I don't, off the top of my head, recall how many there are. I was trying to think if I could remember how many states have voter-led initiatives versus other initiatives, but we don't have that. It's not, as far as I know, it's not something that we have worked on, although it could be something that we have. It's just not something I know if we've worked on in the past.
The League of Women Voters themselves, they're a nonpartisan organization, right? Like, it's not just Democrats.
Right. We're nonpartisan, so we focus on the issues, and we do not and have not endorsed candidates or opposed candidates or parties. So this fight was about redistricting. It was about the language in the proposal they were trying to pass, and we would have opposed it, whether it was the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, if it was a bipartisan group, if it was a third party group, any group that would have been working to get something like this in our state constitution, we would have been opposing.
Well, I just wanted to thank you for all the work you did on this, that this was, you don't get a lot of successes in the activist community. You don't get a lot of things that you get to celebrate. Usually the legislature kind of just does what it wants and doesn't really care what we say. So whenever a good coalition comes together and actually manages to get legislators to listen to them, it's a success that we all need to celebrate and really pat ourselves on the back for. Don't stop paying attention, but enjoy the victories when we get them.
Right, definitely. And it's great, especially because a lot of the groups that were involved are newly created groups, to show that when people come together and work together and get organized, it works. And I'm used to people asking me, not just in this role, but in past roles that I've played, you know, why, like, how are we going to win this? Why would they do this? You know, in talking about people who are in positions of power, who have control over something, you know, why would they relinquish that control, or why would they give us what they want? And what I always say is, well, people in positions of power don't give us what we want because they're being nice. It's usually because we demand it, and the pressure becomes such that they have no other choice. So it's just,
it's a sad commentary, but you're right. You know, it's such a sad commentary. That's who we voted, people that we have to fight tooth and nail.
But even, you know, for labor unions also, and when workers come together and want to bargain a contract, it's also something that I've heard, at least, you know, among workers, like, well, we have these demands. We want these raises. We want these improvements. Why should they give these to us? It's like, well, we have to demonstrate our power and come together and be united and make those demands. And it's, and it works.
And I think this also shows the power of issue-driven organization. Like, if it was just, you know, only organizations led by Democrats or only organizations led by Republicans, then, you know, I probably would not have shown up for either one of those. But being a true, like, coalition group, I think really it shows the power of when we just organize around issues instead of parties, we have a lot more power.
Right. And even groups that don't focus, that there are environmental organizations, other groups that have other focuses statewide. If we don't have a map that's been drawn fairly, if we don't have fair districts, we don't have fair representations, we can't hold our elected officials accountable, none of us can advance any of our legislative priorities for our organizations. If we have a group of elected officials who feel safe and secure in their districts, and feel like no matter what they do, they won't be voted out. And that's why it mattered to so many people, because it is very specific. Redistricting, it's not a term that a lot of people have heard, but when you think about it in terms of how do we hold our elected officials accountable? Do our votes matter? Do our voices matter? Will we be heard? Then it resonates with so many groups, because the redistricting is a fundamental component of our democracy. It's how our political power gets redistributed, and it's how we're able to come together as a group based on how the lines are drawn and exercise our political power. So if those lines are manipulated in a way to dilute that power of some groups, that's a problem. And that's not what we need for our democracy to be healthy.
One more note. It was just a funny piece of trivia that I found. Do you actually know where the term gerrymandering came from?
I do. I don't know if I can tell you the year, but Elbridge Gerry was in Massachusetts. He drew his district in a way that looked like a salamander. His last name was Gerry, G-R-R-Y. So the joke was that he created a gerrymander, and now now we call it gerrymandering. So I do know that.
Yeah, that was just a fun little piece of trivia that they drew a district that looks like a salamander. Because I've always thought the district I live in kind of looks a little bit like a Welsh dragon. And we're like down in the foot of the Welsh dragon. What am I, District 9? So
most of the craziest drawn districts across the country all have some kind of creature or character attached to them.
Yeah, and some of the districts, I mean, New Jersey's got some bad ones, but there are some crazy districts across the state across the country where districts aren't even like contiguous. Like, they're just miles apart.
We've in our, because the League of Women Voters, we, the Fair Districts campaign launched about a year ago. So voter education on redistricting, studying best practices across the country, coming up, working with other national redistricting experts to develop a constitutional amendment for New Jersey. We've been doing this work for over a year. And And what I've heard in traveling around the state talking to people about this campaign is, oh, but it's not as bad as in New Jersey. And it might not be as bad. Our districts are not making their way all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. But that doesn't mean that we should take an okay process and make it worse. And we felt like what was being proposed would have taken us backwards. If we're going to put forward reforms, we took steps forward when we created the commission that exists now. It's a bipartisan commission. Five Democrats, five Republicans are appointed. An 11th member comes in if they can't reach agreement, which usually they can't. But it's a process that's different from the other states where just whichever party controls the legislature controls the process. Mm-hmm. So we do have a process that is better, but we could make it a lot better. There are really very few standards right now that dictate how the lines should be redrawn. It just states that the lines have to connect, needs to be contiguous, needs to be compact. There are other standards that we believe should be in there, namely protection of communities of color and protection of communities of interest, to ensure that everyone is equally and fairly represented. So again, it's not as bad as other states, but it could be better.
And it's far from perfect. There are some definite oddities in the New Jersey districting as it is.
Yeah.
Especially down where I am. Like, I should be in Legislative District 2, because it's most of Atlantic County is Legislative District 2. Except I'm just stuck into, like, with Burlington and Camden County. And then there's, like, a little part over that from what, you know, the rumor going around was that one of the state senators, his opponent lived in that district or in that town. So that town got moved into another district, the last redistricting cycle.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the problem also with the lack of transparency in the current process. We don't know why the lines were drawn in the way that they were. The process is not subject to our sunshine laws. They don't have to have public hearings at all. The last commission did put in their bylaws to have three public hearings, and they ended up having more, which is great. But the Constitution is silent on that. So if they chose to not have any public hearings, they could get away with that. They would be abiding by the Constitution. So we don't know. We can't call for records to find out why was, you know, there are parts of the western part of Atlantic County that's all the way attached to the districts that go out towards Camden and Burlington County, and then the northern part of Atlantic County is attached to the Ocean County district. So Atlantic County is broken up a lot of different ways, and people don't understand why, and we have to trust what we're told when the commissioners explain to us why it was drawn that way. We just have to trust that what they're telling us is correct. But because of lack of transparency, we'll never know. So we hope any reforms moving forward do improve transparency and improve public input. And you know, when the public is able to see drafts of maps and ask questions, we'll be able to have these questions answered for us to understand why is the district, why was it drawn this way? Why are you proposing that my county should be broken up in this way? Why are you proposing that my town not be with the rest of my county? So more transparency is definitely something that's needed in the process.
I would absolutely agree with you there. We're just about coming up on time. I didn't know. Do you have any last words, or do you want to plug anything for the League of Women Voters before we call it a night?
Yeah. So prior to all of this happening, we had been traveling and doing educational events. So we do plan to hold a series of forums early in the new year. I don't have all the dates set yet. We're working right now to reserve spaces and do all, you know, coordinate all those logistics. But we have all of our redistricting work is on Fair Districts NJ on Facebook and on Twitter. So it's FAIRDISTRICTSNJ is the handle. So in addition to getting on our mailing list through fairdistrictsnj.org, we will be announcing those educational events for people to come learn more about what's the process in New Jersey, what are the issues with the process, what are some redistricting best practices, national best practices that other states have implemented, what's possible in New Jersey, and to ask questions and to provide public feedback, because now that these problematic proposals are off the table, we have the opportunity now to come back to do the work that we had been doing prior, educating voters, collecting feedback, and hopefully working with legislators to get something passed and have the voters have something on the ballot for hopefully November 2019.
All right. Thank you so much for being here tonight. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Take care.
To my listeners, I want to thank you so much for joining us here tonight. We are here for the activist community. We're here to be a voice and report on the activist community. We are nothing without the community we represent, and we have to keep asking you for help. We do not take any corporate money. We only represent activists. So if you have the ability to, please click on that donate button. Chip in whatever you can, be it $1, $5, $10, $100, $1,000. Whatever it is that you can do really helps us here, and we appreciate you so much. The future is yours to create. Go out there and create it.